Dynamed.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, our guest says that our new governor has promised to drain the swamp in Tallahassee, but our guest, the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times, has uncovered what looks like a pay-to-play scheme operated by Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis' political committee. More on that in just a moment. First, two listener comments about yesterday's program. On the program, I read an AP report yesterday about Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu promising to annex all of the Israeli settlements of the West Bank if he wins the re-election, doing damage to those people who want a two-state solution. And yesterday, I also interviewed a Sarasota resident who had just returned from a trip to Iran. Here's what two listeners had to say.
I just found your show, and I found it very tail end. It was brought up about how the two-state solution was not working, but I think it's important to make note that when Arafat was there, Israel offered in excess of, 80, 90% of what they were asking for in order to come to terms of peace and to give Palestine their own state. But to me, that was kind of important, and it seems to get overlooked. So it doesn't appear to me that it's Israel that doesn't want peace. It would be the Palestinian Authority that is looking to cause the problem over in the Middle East. At least that's my thoughts on it. I did come into the very tail end, so I didn't hear all the comments, but that was a comment that I had heard about this two-state solution wasn't working.
This is Eitan from Tampa. I'm calling about the other listener that contacted you yesterday, talking about Iran and Saudi Arabia. So one of your callers emailed you about a person on YouTube that posts videos. The person from Australia posts videos. His YouTube page is called Indigo Traveler, I-N-D-I-G-O. I'd also watched last month when he was in Iran, or 2 months ago, briefly about him. He's a documentary maker. He does deep research before he travels countries. He makes contacts with people there that will welcome him and open to talk with him and show him the countries, but positive and negative. So after Iran, he went to Kurdistan, also investigated that. And his last big trip was in Venezuela, doing deep, deep investigation there, showing both sides of many different communities. So again, he's a documentary filmmaker that posts his content on YouTube. So you may consider looking him up, or your listeners looking him up, and actually seeing video and person that does it all by himself to go out there and interview and get the hard stories that cable news networks in the United States don't investigate.
Well, there you have two listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. The Tampa Bay Times political editor, Steve Contorno, has uncovered documents that describe a pay-to-play operation within Governor Ron DeSantis' political committee. It's an investigation into how the governor's committee is offering access to the governor for special interests with deep pockets. Steve Contorno joins us live right now, and you can also see this program on a live video stream on the WMNF News Facebook page. And Steve, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me, Rob.
All right. So first of all, what is a political committee?
So the governor, when he's running for office, or any candidate that's running for office, they can set up their, they have their campaign, and there are pretty strict limits on how much you can raise through those campaigns. But candidates can also set up separate political committees, and those committees have absolutely no limits on how much can be raised. You know, there are rules operating what they can do and what they can't, but, there are donations in six figures that are very common coming into a lot of these political committees for the governor or for some of the legislative leaders. So that's really where they do a lot of their fundraising and a lot of the money they raise throughout, between elections and during campaigns.
So I described it as pay to play. Is that a fair description, or is that too strong?
I guess in one sense it's quite literal, because you can pay to play golf with him, according to some of these emails. You know, I do caution that one of the things we were told by the chairperson of his political committee was that, you know, this was a proposal that was never put into effect, and that but at the same time, we did find instances where aspects of this proposal seemed to be implemented. There was several Duke lobbyists, according to emails and other things we obtained, show that Duke lobbyists were able to pay what looks like $100,000 to have a round of golf with Ron DeSantis early in, you know, just weeks after he took office.
So let's go back to the start. So what did the document, you got a document.
A couple documents
from the governor's political committee.
Yeah, we obtained two memos from just after Ron DeSantis took office as governor, and it highlights and outlines how his political committee hoped to more or less sell the governor's time to big donors. And the thing that is really interesting is how much access they requested and how much time they requested with the governor's official team. You know, some of these things that are laid out in these emails are essentially saying we need to have weekly conversations about the governor's schedule so we know where he's going, what his positions are. And on the other end of the spectrum is the political committee was saying things like, we need to, you know, we'll keep you apprised of any quote unquote like asks, or I might be bungling exactly what it was, but essentially if there are any non-finance requests, that was the term used, they would be passed along to the governor's senior staff. And you know, it sounded like passing along requests from these large donors to the governor's actual staff. We never got the governor's office to respond to us to explain what that meant or the person who sent that email. So we're kind of left to guess a bit. But, you know, it's five pages and of pretty brazen, stark details of how they hope to raise money and elevate his profile.
Let's talk about some of the numbers. So there were actual numbers, dollar figures for certain things that these people who made the donation or made the contribution would get from the governor. Talk about what some of the numbers were.
Yeah, for $25,000, you could golf with the governor. For $100,000, you can golf with him one-on-one. For $150,000, you can have a dinner with him. $250,000 minimum for intimate gatherings, both in state and out of state. And you know, with some of these big fundraisers that he's been attracting, like Sheldon Adelson in the casino magnate. And just to meet with him for 10 to 15 minutes, they suggested a $25,000 donation. It seemed like as well that they were hoping to parlay the governor's travel schedule with these campaign opportunities. So if the governor goes and meets with a business in his official capacity, it would also open up the opportunity to meet with the business's executives for fundraising opportunities as well.
So did you find you said that there were some organizations that appeared to give money to the governor's political committee, which is called, the Friends of Ron DeSantis?
Friends of Ron DeSantis, and the memos say that the Friends of Ron DeSantis and the Republican Party of Florida are interchangeable. So when the governor travels or when the governor makes these commitments, if they could give to him or they can give to the Republican Party, and it's one and the same. So in this instance, according to the emails, Duke Energy, soon after Governor DeSantis took office, arranged for three of their lobbyists to golf with him in South Florida at a pretty exclusive course down there. And according to the emails we obtained, they pledged $100,000, and within a few days of that round of golf, they donated $75,000 to the Republican Party of Florida.
Mm-hmm. But the governor's people are denying that this pay-to-play operation really went into effect.
The chair of this political committee told us in a statement that it never went into effect. The governor's office declined to respond to all of our questions. We asked over the course of several days to speak with him, and we were denied. So we don't really know what the governor himself says about this. We know what his former political chair says about it. But there are, beyond the Duke Energy example, there are other instances we found where the golf was put into effect. And as well, the emails, the memos themselves seem to suggest that the governor approved the plan. I mean, it says as much in the memo that the governor and the first lady, who's very involved in his political and operation, she and him approved the fundraising strategy that was laid out in that memo, and that they wanted to be involved. And one of the big reasons why was because the governor wanted to make sure he maintained a high profile at all times in the state of Florida and outside of the state. And that was quoted in one of the memos.
Indicating possible future political ambitions.
That seems to be the suggestion. I mean, it wasn't laid out that explicitly, but, you know, he is already pretty popular in Florida, especially among Republicans. He's got a pretty interesting profile. He has strong ties to the president and his network. He's, you know, got a military background, Ivy League education. He's got a young family, good looking young family. And the thought is that, you know, his time in the governor's office could lay the groundwork for a presidential run. That's always been the rumor since, you know, the day he won the primary. And what was laid out in these memos seems to suggest they are trying to build the framework for that potential long-term political aspirations.
Our guest is Steve Contorno, who's the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times, and we're talking about a possible pay-to-play effort by Governor Ron DeSantis and his staff. The story ran in Sunday's newspaper. It's online right now, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our email address here is dj@wmnf.org if you want to write in a question. So, Steve, did you do a public records request to get this document or these documents?
No, this was information we obtained through
a source
reporting. Yeah.
Okay. Are the donations to friends of Ron DeSantis, are those public record?
Yes, those are public record, and he's raised about $2 million. It might be up to $2.6 million since he won the election. And what's interesting is, you know, he was very critical during the election and the primary of his opponent for being a swamp creature. And he, you know, his campaign called Adam Putnam a shill for special interests.
He was really tough on Putnam during that campaign.
Yeah. He was, you know, he called him Sugar's errand boy, you know, and so he was very, this idea that he was going to come in and drain the swamp was very much part of his political narrative. But when we analyze his campaign contributions, almost half have come from a lot of the large corporations that once gave money to Adam Putnam. And including, you know, Disney, Tico, a lot of the utilities, AmScot, you know, the payday lender and things like that. So sort of these long special interests that had been donating to Adam Putnam and who Putnam criticized for accepting, you know, the swamp. He's been sort of, you know, fundraising in that same pool as well.
You said earlier that the governor and his wife had signed off on this. How do you know that?
In the memo. The follow-up memo there was one on January 17th and a follow-up one on January 20th that was sent from Susie Wiles, who was his political committee chairperson, to his chief of staff in the governor's office, where she said that it was approved. The fundraising plan in the January 17th memo was approved by the governor and the first lady.
Don't all political candidates do this on some level, especially at the level of maybe U.S. Senate or governor, that they probably do want to run for higher office at some point and set up these committees for their political future?
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly, and it's probably not the first time, and certainly not the first time that access goes to those who are willing to pay for it. The Lincoln bedroom Clinton scandal comes to mind. And, you know, Mick Mulvaney, the governor or the chief of staff for the president, said, if you donated to my campaign when I was in Congress, you were a lobbyist, we might let you in the door. If you didn't donate, we wouldn't. So this kind of access is definitely not new. I think what was especially telling in what we've uncovered is one, DeSantis sort of promised to be different. He came in on this mentality that he would drain the swamp, and you know, within a month he's going golfing with Duke Energy lobbyists, and I don't think there's a more entrenched special interest than the utility companies in Tallahassee. So that's why that's interesting on one level, and two, it's just, you know, I think we assume a lot of these things happen, but to see it spelled out in such stark and brazen and laid out there in such naked terms. I was, as someone who covers this full time, I was still surprised at how open and willing they are to discuss what goes on behind the scenes when they don't think the public is watching.
Is there any indication that it was shut down? You know, that maybe they thought about this was a good idea at the beginning and now they've shut it down?
So far, our reporting hasn't indicated as much, and like I said, the governor's office has not been responsive to any questions we sent them. I will say, though, that in the past 48 hours, we've learned a lot about what's sort of next for Susie Wiles, his political chairperson.
Was she in charge of Friends of Ron DeSantis?
She was the chair, yeah. And she not only... was in charge of their political committee, but she took over his campaign and at the tail end of 2018, and then led his transition team as well. So
she's a longtime political operative. Some people think that she was the key to his victory in 2018.
Yeah, she's operating the state for so long. She ran both of Governor Scott's campaigns. She was very instrumental in both of those, and she also was the Florida chair for the Trump campaign. So. When Ron DeSantis won the primary, you know, he had kind of had this sort of chaotic campaign to beat an entrenched establishment candidate like Adam Putnam. And so when he took over the nomination, he kind of needed some professionalism and some connections to the people who had been operating the state for a long time. And so in the closing weeks, with the numbers showing Andrew Gillum up by quite a bit, they brought in Susie Wiles to sort of run things, and she was credited really for professionalizing and fixing some of the problems he was having, including, you know, he wasn't very media friendly. He didn't have a lot of position papers out there explaining who, you know, all he ran on as a primary candidate was Trump's guy. And, you know, in the general campaign, there wasn't much substance he was putting out there. And she kind of came in and got some of that out there for him and really was credited for rescuing what some thought was headed for a disaster. I mean, that could be just a narrative that came out of this whole thing, but, you know, she has a track record of running successfully campaigns in the state of
Florida. She has quite a winning streak, too.
Yeah, she does.
And for football fans, she's Pat Summerall's sister, right?
Daughter.
Daughter. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Daughter. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Pat Summerall's daughter. And, you know, she's kind of a Jack Kemp Reagan Republican. She got involved in politics in that era. So it was kind of a surprise when she took over Trump's campaign in Florida in 2016, because many saw her as sort of this genteel, well-liked, well-established Republican fighter, and for her to, you know, be one of the first people to join the Trump campaign surprised a lot of people, but you know, she led him to victory here.
We're talking with Steve Contorno, the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times, about his front page story in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times about Governor Ron DeSantis, and the headline on it is Fundraising at the Fore. It looks at a possible pay-to-play operation within one of the governor's political committees called Friends of Ron DeSantis. So just veering a little bit, Susie Wiles just stepped down from the Trump re-election campaign here in Florida. She is, as you pointed out, she has quite a positive track record for winning elections for Republicans. And she says she's stepping down because of health reasons. Do you have any insight as to why she might have stepped down?
I don't think the timing is a coincidence. The reporting that the Politico did was that Ron DeSantis called up Trump himself and demanded she be removed. That obviously conflicts with the statement that she has put out there. And
so there seems to be tension now between DeSantis and Susan Wiles.
Reportedly, there has been for quite some time. I'm not sure what the nexus of it is, but she ran his transition and she ran his political committee from the start. But other outlets have reported that they've been on the outs for a while, and she actually, as we were reporting our story and asking questions to the governor's office, the day before our story ran, she was removed from his political committee as chairperson about 24 hours before, and you know, they filed the paperwork to put someone else in charge of it.
Just circling back to this idea that special interests are able to pay $100,000 and get access to Governor DeSantis for 4 hours of golf with him one-on-one. I think a lot of people would look at that and say, isn't that illegal? Do we have a law against that here in the state of Florida?
I don't think so. I mean, as long as you, you know, this is a sunshine state, and as long as you report it, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way things are set up here. You know, there are certain things they have to do to make sure that they're not running afoul of the laws, but for the most part, you know, that's just how our political system works here, is that if you have a lot of money, you can donate it, and candidates and campaigns and political committees can use a whole bunch of tactics to raise that money.
A few years ago, one of your predecessors, Howard Troxler, one of the columnists at the Tampa Bay Times, Howard wrote as he was leaving, he talked about how we have a system of legalized bribery here in the state of Florida, because you can give these unlimited amounts of money to political action committees.
Yeah.
And Howard equated it to bribery. I'm not asking you for your opinion on that, But have any good government groups stepped forward and said, hey, look, we ought to look into this and try to limit the amount of contributions that can go to these political committees?
There definitely would be that interest from those groups, but they haven't been successful. And in a state run by the Republicans, in fact, they've been trying to get rid of some of the public funding that goes into elections. There are mechanisms to use public funding for candidates so that people who are, you know, maybe lower, might not have access to exposure as easily, can get access to some public money. There, you know, the former Speaker of the House, Richard Corcoran, tried to get rid of that a few times. So there hasn't been a movement to reform in that regard. And in fact, there's been some efforts to get rid of what little sort of reforms there are. And the other thing is the organizations and the special interests that operate in the state of Florida are getting more and more sophisticated in hiding how they're spending money. They're sort of, you know, washing it through various committees and PACs and stuff like that before it actually gets into a candidate's political committee. So you'll see like $100,000 donation to Friends of Ron DeSantis or a similar committee from some fuzzy sounding organization. And it's hard to trace where that money is actually coming from, because it's come from three or four other groups before it's gotten to that organization.
Hmm. One last question before I let you go, and that is Marion Hammer, who's the chief lobbyist in Tallahassee for guns and for the Second Amendment. She's 80 years old, but she's had a string of track records herself. She's won a lot of battles against gun control groups over the years. You wrote about her the other day. Tell us what the brunt of that story was.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting time for the National Rifle Association. There is a lot of turmoil at the national organization, which she's on the board of. So she's been sort of forced to answer questions for the lavish spending for the NRA head, Wayne LaPierre. And she's also having some of her own finances come under scrutiny recently from some stories in the Tallahassee Democrat and the Washington Post. So the NRA seems weaker than at any point in my lifetime, and it's interesting because now we're about to head into a conversation in the legislature about what to do about mass shootings and gun violence, and whether or not the weakened state of the NRA is a factor is going to be more interesting here than maybe anywhere else in the country, because of how effective Marion Hammer and the NRA have been in pushing gun legislation over the last two decades. I mean, concealed carry and a whole bunch of other things that have now used in quite a few states. They all originated in Florida. It's sort of been the testing ground for the NRA's legislative playbook. And you know, after Parkland, we sort of saw the break in the seal that might indicate things could start to go in the other direction. And certainly the fact that they're even having this conversation and willing to have it has led some to believe that her grip on the Republican government there is not as strong as it once was.
Sometimes when I hear people who are up in Tallahassee at the committee hearings say that sometimes Marion will be there in the front row listening to a committee hearing about some proposed gun legislation, and some of the legislators who are worried about the NRA will look to her and look, you know, to see whether or not there's thumbs up or thumbs down on a piece of legislation.
Yeah, her scorecards that she sends out at the end of each legislative session on how each lawmaker fared on gun, you know, pro-Second Amendment votes has scared a lot of lawmakers into taking positions that, you know, from our reporting shows that they necessarily weren't agreeing with, but were afraid of getting, you know, knocked down from 100% rating from the NRA to 90% and getting a primary challenge as a result of that. So, you know, I don't, the NRA isn't necessarily a financial juggernaut in Florida. They're not like an organization that donates a ton to candidates, but because they are a very organized and vocal group with a very strong and well-connected leader in Marion Hammer, they've been able to get a lot accomplished for their cause. Whether that's the case in the next 2, 4, 6 years remains to be seen.
She still has quite a mailing list.
She does.
So that's still pretty powerful. Steve, you put out something every few days called The Buzz. How can people subscribe to it? Because it's a list of some of the best stories in the Times about politics.
Yeah, we've revamped our newsletter, and it's getting a lot of attention, and people, I think, are really enjoying it. It comes out Thursday mornings at 8 a.m., and it's written and put together by me and our staff, and you can sign up at tampabay.com/newsletters. And you type in your email address and your zip code and click on The Buzz, and you'll get that in your inbox every Thursday morning. There'll be one tomorrow from me if you sign up this afternoon.
All right. Well, Steve Contorno, thanks a lot for coming by WMNF.
Thank you, Rob.
Steve Contorno is the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. In just a moment, we're going to open up the phone lines, and we'll also speak with somebody who's participating in the climate march this Saturday in St. Petersburg. By the way, you can see that whole interview on the WMNF News Facebook page. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for listening to Radioactivity. And this weekend in St. Petersburg and in Tampa, there will be a climate march. There's going to be a climate march on Saturday. And let's speak with Candace Roberts right now, who's one of the people involved in that climate march. Hi, Candace. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, but I think there's been some confusion.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually organizing the co-organizer of the We the People March, which is in St. Petersburg this Saturday.
Okay, well, thanks. Thanks for straightening me out. I have a different note here. So tell us what's going to happen on Saturday.
Okay, I'd love to. So we are, the We the People March in St. Petersburg on Saturday will take place starting at 11 a.m. in Crescent Lake Park. We are one of over 60 marches that will take place throughout the United States and in Washington, D.C. on Saturday simultaneously. And we expect more than 100,000 people at the Washington, D.C. March. We're all marching to demonstrate that the status quo is a threat to our democracy, that our lawmakers have failed us on many issues, and that we are going to hold them accountable. We'll have a pre-march rally in the park, followed by a one-mile march. And we were really pleased to announce our speakers yesterday. We have Dr. LaDonna Butler, the founder and executive director of the Well for Life. We have two student activists, Rowan O'Flanagan and Christopher Zeller. And we have a Parkland shooting survivor, Susanna Mata Valdivieso, who has become a very active with social, environmental, and political issues. So we really just are throughout the United States, and there are some marches, even solidarity marches, even overseas. We're making a statement that it's time to take back our democracy.
And do you have a list of accomplishments or things that you want? Is there a list of demands that you're calling for?
Well, we actually want everyone who has been failed by the lawmakers on any of the issues that we all care about, climate change, gun control, kids in cages, health care, it's the list goes on. The call to action and the demand is really that November 3rd is coming. The day of reckoning for our elected officials is coming, and if they continue to fail us, then we will vote to save the future of our democracy. We will vote holding them accountable. And to that end, voter registration is a huge part of our march. We actually have a head count providing nonpartisan voter registration, and we really want a lot, you know, youth, a lot of the youth in our community to come out, because obviously new voters are important, and it's the youth that are going to be impacted by the future of our democracy.
And Candace, who are some of the groups that have endorsed this march on Saturday?
We are really we're a completely grassroots effort, and we are basically issue independent. We're trying to be apolitical, as is the national march. Throughout the country, we really aren't looking for or haven't sought endorsements or sponsors. It's truly grassroots. We, the people, are going to make our voices, we're going to be seen and heard on Saturday throughout the United States.
And Candace, if people want to find out more, where can they find you on Facebook, or can you tell us about a website?
Yes, I'd love to. So you can go to Facebook and find us as We the People March St. Petersburg. And we are posting frequently updates about the march and information that you need to know and more details about our schedule. And we also still need a few volunteers, and you can find our email address on our Facebook event page.
Well, Candace Roberts, thanks a lot. It's the We the People March at Crescent Lake in St. Petersburg, right there off 22nd, and it starts at noon.
Starts at 11 a.m.
11 a.m. on Saturday.
Yes.
All right. Well, Candace, thanks a lot for coming on M&F.
Thank you so much.
Well, glad to do it. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Terry writes in via email to remind us that the Climate March and Rally is this Friday at noon at the St. Pete City Hall. So, Terry, thank you for that. Let's go to Jeff in Plant City. Jeff, what's on your mind today?
I was wondering about these parents that are caught up in this college admission scandal. And, you know, I'm not condoning what they did, and I don't want to see it happen, but why wouldn't they be able to? And maybe Citizens United defines freedom of speech where money's concerned solely where politics are involved. But then again, how can you capsulize free speech? So why couldn't they just say, look, you know, this money that I paid was me using my free speech to get my children in the best possible educational situation?
Well, maybe they will use Citizens United to justify their bribery. Maybe they will.
I hate to see it.
Well, maybe a good lawyer will suggest that legal argument.
All you legals get the cogitating and get an answer for it.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope Citizens United influence shrinks rather than expands in our society.
I agree.
All right, Jeff, good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. And if you've got thoughts about anything that you've heard here so far on WMNF today, whether it be on Democracy Now! Or the morning news, or for the last half hour with Steve Contorno, call us up, 813-239-9663. Here's Wendell in downtown St. Pete writing in. He says, thanks to your guest, Steve Contorno, for revealing what he's found about Florida's governor. And while this pay-to-play scheme is nothing new, I'm amazed that Florida people are so, time and time again, clueless as to the facts of hypocrisy and corruption. I never liked DeSantis, writes Wendell, because when you look behind the curtain, I find him very deceitful, but it seems Floridians like deceitful candidates like Rick Scott, writes Wendell. Wendell, thanks for your thoughts. If you've got different thoughts, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Suzanne writes this about the climate strike this weekend. She says, there's also an event at the Tampa City Hall at 5 p.m. this Friday. And you can contact Chance at chancej321@gmail.com for more information. So, and that'll take place at the Tampa City Hall, 315 East Kennedy at 5 p.m. this Friday. So, Suzanne, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And Carol Arenas is our phone producer today. Thanks to her. And thanks to Blandy Whalen for videotaping the first half of the show today. Let's go to Teresa in St. Pete. Hi, Teresa. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to talk about Ron DeSantis and his play to pay.
Okay.
As I recall, when they were running for governor and Andrew Gillum, they were against the fact that, or they're investigating him, I think they still are, for his taking Broadway tickets from his brother.
Yep.
And they're saying that was, you know, not right, or he took a trip somewhere. But this is okay for them to pay to play golf with the governor and raise all that money? How is there? Am I not seeing a difference, or is it the same? It seems the same to me.
That maybe taking Broadway tickets would be small potatoes compared to taking $100,000 from a special interest.
Well, I don't know. Well, you could. Yeah, I guess it's not as much, but is it the fact that he's taking all this money, which seems to be okay with them, but when Andrew Gillum took some Broadway tickets from his brother, oh, that's wrong.
Well, we'll see. It's an interesting question. I mean, I go back to what Howard Troxler wrote when he was leaving the Times.
I used to read his article all the time.
Saying that we have a system of legalized bribery here in the state of Florida, warning people
I'm just wondering if one side says, oh, it's perfectly okay for you to pay $100,000 go golf with the governor, but it's not okay for a government or a governor candidate to take some Broadway tickets that his brother got for him. So I don't know. Maybe it's me. I don't see the difference.
All right. Well, Teresa, thanks a lot. It's a good point to raise, and I'm glad you did. Thank you, Teresa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Just quoting from Steve's article, DeSantis once told Fox News he would, quote, drain the swamp in Tallahassee, which needs to be drained just like Washington. And his campaign called Republican primary opponent Adam Putnam a shill for special interest money and a swamp dweller. So that's what the governor said during the campaign. I meant to ask Steve about the governor's golf game, and I don't know why I didn't do that. I always think that one of the signs of somebody who's spending too much time playing golf is that they have a low handicap. And so I wonder what we know about Governor DeSantis's golf game and whether or not that's part of the public record. It's interesting. I get as all reporters do, I think, in the state, we get a list of what the governor is up to every day. And it's interesting to look at that list of things. Sometimes, many times, especially with the previous governor, there was not much on the governor's schedule for weeks and weeks on end. We often wondered what he was doing. But maybe when Steve comes back, we'll get Steve to come back and I'll ask him how many times the governor's played golf and what his handicap is. Let's go to Art, who's, I think, listening online. Art, is that you?
Yeah, I'm normally from Largo, but I'm calling from San Francisco.
Well, thanks for sticking by us on your vacation.
Well, heck, of course. It's my pleasure. The reason why I'm calling is that I want to comment on the gentleman who left you a message blaming the Palestinians for the breakdown of the two-state solution and the Oslo Accords. He didn't give his reference, but I'd like to give you mine. The Israeli historian Avi Shlaim, Shlaim, has a wonderful chapter on the Oslo Agreement, and he would definitely disagree with your caller. and he gives reasons. I'm not at home, so I can't quote his reasons, but he gives reasons why the Israeli government was responsible for the breakdown of the Oslo Accords.
Yeah, basically, the first caller today was a comment about yesterday's program. The
right.
caller said essentially that the Israeli government had offered, when Arafat was alive, had offered him essentially 80% of the occupied territories, and Arafat turned down that offer. And the caller said, well, that's the reason why we don't have a peace partner. The Israelis don't have a peace partner. That was a perfectly acceptable offer, and Arafat shouldn't have turned it down. So that's why we don't have peace in the Middle East, which I think that was pretty much the caller's position.
Yeah, I missed that that program of yours, but I just couldn't let it go. These people should give their references, and that would make them more creditable.
All right. Well, Art, have a great vacation out there. I'm glad you're using. Are you using the MNF app to listen to MNF?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. It's a great thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the first time I use it.
Okay. Thanks, Art. Have a great trip out there. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and we've just opened up the phone lines, and whatever you want to talk about is okay. Coming up in the next hour, Nola's feeling under the weather today, so we're going to play the Tom Hartman radio program in the next hour, the National Progressive call-in show. Here's an email from Tom. Tom says, pay to play seems like prostitution to me, writes Tom. And then I think this is Bill. Bill says, always a great show. Well, Bill, thank you for that. He's listening, I think, online in Jacksonville. Bill, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if there's something that you'd like to bring up that's in the news, or maybe you've heard something here during the show that you'd like to talk about, call us up, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm curious too, what you think of Governor Ron DeSantis. You know, there are, somebody emailed me a second ago, and I'm trying to find the email. It says, Governor Ron DeSantis lands a spot among the 10 most popular U.S. governors. This is according to the Florida Sun Sentinel. Ron DeSantis, 10 most popular governors in the U.S., and the date on that is 7/18 of this year, so July 18th of this year. You know, I think the governor has made some moves to try to reach out to the environmental community and do some positive things for the environmental community. I think that he's also been pretty mum about this idea of the toll roads, too. So I think he's tried to take a slightly different tack than the previous governor did. Our governor, I think it's fair to say, would eventually like to run for president. And I think that's kind of in the background of Steve's story, is that the governor wants to create a fund for his political future, not just for his reelection in 2022, but also to possibly run for president. And I think there is tension between the three top Republicans in the state. I think they all want to run for president. Marco Rubio, Rick Scott, our two U.S. senators, and Ron DeSantis. So I think there is some tension, and I think that, according to Steve's article, the governor's trying to get his name out more in preparation for a possible run for president. Well, we've got an open line. The number to call, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if there's something that you want to bring up or something that you want to take issue with, maybe you've heard something here already that you would like to comment about. I'm just going to go back to Steve's story for a sec. And just read some of the details of the story. In terms of golf opportunities, what the governor, this fundraising memo written by a woman named Heather Barker, a consultant for Friends of Ron DeSantis, the governor's political committee. The memo outlines her proposed strategy for fundraising, and among the ideas, golf opportunities, a mixture of high-dollar golf foursomes with the governor and the first lady if she's available, and one or two foursomes where he can switch at nine holes. A time commitment, two 18-hole rounds of golf per month. Goal, $25,000 minimum per golfer for a foursome, and $100,000 per person for a one-on-one golf match. And so that's one of the things that Steve uncovered in getting this document from Friends of Ron DeSantis. Let's go to Alan, who's driving. Alan, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning. I don't purport to know the answer or what can be done about Israel and Palestine. I think it's horrible, and I'm very upset that there's even been talk about annexing more lands there. But I do want to point out, because I heard on the radio this morning that there's been illegal occupation for over 50 years. And I think people forget that that began with the invasion of Israel on Yom Kippur in 1967, which was kind of like a cowardly time to do it, and an aggressive act that they got their behinds kicked when this happened. And it's been this way now for 50 years. I think it's bad. I wish there was a solution to it. But I think it's greatly overlooked that that's how it started. And a lot of times people, you know, initiate things, then they get their butts kicked, and then they cry, that they've been treated badly. There's two sides.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think one of the questions, though, is how long should this occupation take place where people don't really have voting rights who are occupied? So in yesterday's election, the folks who were occupied had no right to vote for their choice, whether it's Netanyahu or the other candidate. How long should people, live in a situation where they don't have any democratic rights?
Oh, I agree that it's wrong and that it's been way too long. I just think that it never gets mentioned how it's
well, started. I think it's an important thing. You're right. In 1967, that the Six-Day War really started this kind of modern era of it. If Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying that if he does become the next prime minister after yesterday's election, that he's going to annex all the settlements in the West Bank, do you think that takes a step toward peace or away from peace?
Oh, away from peace, in my opinion, absolutely. I think long, long, long ago, and I think a lot of people in that country agree, but I think just like here, the way the people feel is not the way the government acts a lot of times. I think the people want to see peace on both sides, but unfortunately, these religious wars never end.
Yeah,
never end.
It's sad. All right, Alan, great to hear from you. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for all you do.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Alan. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Simon writes, Yom Kippur was 1973, that war. There were actually two wars, one in 67 and one in 73. So Simon writes, Yom Kippur was 1973, not an occupation, writes Simon. Well, Simon, if it's not an occupation, what is it? I don't know, Simon. Simon, if you've got a better word for it than occupation, what would you call it? Maybe there's a more accurate word. 813-239-9663 is our number. Let's go to Carlos, who's in Tampa. Hey, Carlos, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, yes, sir. Just following up on the last caller, I mean, occupation is occupation. You know what I mean? And over 50 years, and he was stating that their butt was kicked. What it is the traitor inside the Arab countries, because most of them, they are just puppets to the USA. And basically, slave will never revolt against his master, basically. And that's what happened. I mean, you just like I listened to one of your shows in the past, Rob, about the war in Iraq. And one of the soldiers, I remember, stated clearly that mosquito can take a fight than the Iraqis. and you saw what happened in the second invasion, what happened, you know what I mean? So, you know, someone who makes calls, doesn't matter the ideology or whatever, needs to be careful before, you know, start making statements like that.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, Carlos, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. All right, good to hear from you. And let's go to Nick in St. Pete. Nick, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, Rob, I love your show, by the way. I've just spoken to Israelis on both sides of the situation. I used to live in California, and we had a lot of people coming to visit from Israel. And they're just really, really sick of the war. I mean, I would say it's an occupation. You know, I'm not Israeli. I'm not Jewish. I'm just your average American. But I just feel like, you know, it's like the situation with us in Iraq. You know, we should just get out. You know, we don't need to be keeping on hold of these people's land. They shouldn't be annexing this massive chunk of territory over a war that happened 50 years ago. I mean, that's just my point. I'll take my answer out there.
All right, Nick, thanks a lot. And what do you think? I mean, if Prime Minister Netanyahu does end up forming a new government, and he does end up taking over and annexing the settlements that are now in the West Bank, is that a step towards peace or away from peace?
I would say a lot further away from peace. I mean, just from the people I've spoken to who live in Israel, they just want to see an end to it. I mean, the hostilities aren't good. I mean, there's terrorists on both sides. That's the way I look at it. I mean, it's just no good. Fighting is never the solution.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Nick,
thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And Simon writes back, but still no answer to my question. Simon had objected to the use of the word occupation. Okay. If it's not an occupation, what is it? Simon, if it's not an occupation, what is it? 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Remember, in the next hour, we're going to hear the Tom Hartman radio program. It should be pretty good. I think Tom's been fired up the last few weeks, and he's got a lot to talk about. Thanks to Carol Arena. She's been our phone producer today. We're going to take maybe one or two more phone calls, and then we'll turn it over to the NPR News and then to Tom Hartman. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. And here is Simon taking himself off the email to call in. All right, Simon, thanks for calling. If it's not an occupation, what is it?
It's disputed land, Rob, and it's according to disputed land by multiple scholars of Julius Stone, Eugene Rostow, who was the author of Resolution 242, which deals with Chapter 6 in Resolution 242.
So, Simon, are you saying that Israel has the right to all of Judea and Samaria?
It's still disputed land.
No, I mean, how did the Israelis come to take over this land after the 1967 Six-Day War? Did they do it militarily, or how did they do it?
Well, in 1967, according to the United Nations United Nations Security Council, had determined that the 1967 war, by unanimous decision, was a defensive war. And so the land in Judea...
All right, so they did take over the land after the 1967 war. So are you saying that Israel now has the right to, as Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying, control all the land that once was the future Palestinian homeland?
It is still land that's being disputed. They take over security of the land in collaboration with the Palestinian Authority until, again, under Chapter 6 of Resolution 242, where both parties have to determine a resolution. Therefore, it is still disputed land.
Well, if Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying that I'm going to take this over and I'm going to where these settlements are, which are now a large part of the West Bank, if Prime Minister Netanyahu says I'm going to take this over, how is he's not working with any of the parties? He's just saying unilaterally I'm going to do it. So how is he, if he's not working with the other parties who are disputing the land, how is he carrying out the international law?
Well, first of all, you're wrong because the settlements only make up 1.8% of...
But if you look at the highways and if you look at the walls and if you look at the maps put out by B'Tselem, it's much more than 1.8%. Simon, I'm sorry we didn't have more time. We're out of time. But if you want to comment about today's show and any listener wants to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the NPR News. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Carol Arenas for being our phone producer today. Blanny Whalen was our videographer, and this is 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. Here is the latest news from NPR.